Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the bird flu epidemic right after this. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax, and a fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed 72%. Now, government taxes us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that government does to produce, prepare, or deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the guy in the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that he has to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it? Why is it that government gets paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that you and I buy? Well, if you'd like more information about tax and status, just call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school, four-hour commentary. And it's entertaining, and it's educational, and it's free of charge. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative, and it's free. Doesn't cost you a dime. And our school, Tax and Status, is on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine now and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of swine flu. Remember that? 24 hours ago. That was last night. Talking about swine flu and how President Ford encouraged us to go down and get our swine flu shot. And then they came up with a bunch of side effects over here that killed more people than the damn flu. Talk about little boy crying wolf here. Well, swine flu back in 1976 never appeared. It was the little boy crying wolf. That's what I brought up last time. I said, you know, we've heard this wolf cry for so long. It's kind of like the second coming. You know, you've heard preachers telling you about Jesus is coming. Jesus is coming. And Billy Graham, Christ could come tonight. Remember Billy? He used to get real excited, didn't he? And then I read the Bible one time. I said, Christ ain't coming tonight. As I speak to you right now, on October the 30th, 2005, Christ is not coming tonight. He ain't coming tomorrow night or the day after either. In Bible prophecy, he laid out a series of events. He said, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, and then this other thing's going to happen, and there's a series of events that are going to transpire, and they ain't happened yet. He ain't coming back tomorrow. He ain't coming back tonight. That's crap. People believe it, but then it's just crap. And people believed in this swine flu thing. It was just crap, but they believed in it. And they went down and got their vaccinations, and then came down with Julian Barr syndrome and 15 other side effects over here that killed, hurt, and maimed more people than the flu did. And you couldn't sue the manufacturers of the swine flu vaccine because Congress gave them carte blanche, gave them a pass, gave them a go-to-go. And that's what these pharmaceuticals have today. You go down and get vaccinated and have any side effects, you can forget about suing Pfizer or Merck or any of these pharmaceutical companies because that ain't going to happen. There's a fund you can sue. You can sue the government and get paid 10 cents on the dollar. That's the way that game is played. That's why I decided a long time ago that I didn't want George Bush protecting me from flu or terrorists or anything else. Just get the hell out of my life, government. Now, our founding fathers had that philosophy. They wanted King George and government to get out of their lives, and they would take care of themselves. Well, that goes on for a long time, and then people, they get wealthy. You know, people working for themselves make a lot of wealth, and then they get lazy and get tired, and then they want government to come in here and solve all their problems for them. That's where we're at today in the cycle. We're to the point where we want the government to solve all of our problems. When something goes wrong, we want to call our representative and say, fix that. Now, of course, the government comes in and they fix it, and they do the job half as well, charge you twice as much. In the case of Donald Trump, he said it'll cost you five times as much to rebuild New Orleans if the government does it than if you people do it yourself. That's fine with me. You know, if you people want to have the government rebuild New Orleans, get after it. Don't let me get in your way. But just leave me out of the loop. I'm not going to participate in the program. Well, anyway, the government then assumed the liability of the pharmaceutical companies during a potential epidemic, 1976. The experience weakened U.S. credibility in public health, and it helped undermine the stature of President Ford. Subsequently, an official assessment of what went wrong was performed for the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare by Dr. Harvey Feinberg. He was a Harvard professor who is current president of the Institute of Medicine. Well, Feinberg concluded, in this case, the consequences of being wrong about an epidemic were so devastating in people's minds that it wasn't possible to focus properly on the issue of likelihood. Nobody could really estimate likelihood then or now. The challenge in such circumstances is to be able to distinguish things so that you can rationally talk about it. Well, in 1976, some policymakers were simply overwhelmed by the consequences of being wrong. And at a higher level in the White House, the two, likelihood and consequences, got meshed. Feinberg's warnings are well worth remembering today. As scientists nervously consider this H5N1 avian influenza in Asia, the consequences of a form of this virus that is transmittable from human to human, particularly if it retains its unprecedented virulence, would be disastrous. But what is the likelihood that such a virus will appear? What is the likelihood? All right, let's pause here for a little editorial comment. What in the hell do we care what the likelihood is? Think about it. What difference does it make to me or you or anybody else what the likelihood is? As far as I'm concerned, it's 100%. I need to be prepared for it 100%. It's like being prepared for famine. You're either prepared for it or you're not. Now, we have never had a famine here in the United States, at least not in modern historical times. We're not short of food here in the United States. Everybody's got plenty of everything. But famine is coming to America at some point in time. I don't know when. I don't know what the likelihood is. I don't know how to figure the odds. So I tell my students, you should have a 4-year supply of food on hand. Why 4 years? Because the Great Tribulation calls for 3.5 years, 1,260 days. We should be prepared for it today in 2005. My granddad should have been prepared for it in 1917. His dad should have been prepared for it in 1895. And so on back to the first time that that prophecy was uttered by Jesus himself. And every generation from now on should have a supply on hand. Let me give you a quick illustration of preparedness. My wife has a regimen that she's on, and she uses coffee. You know, the Gerson coffee enema program. And she uses coffee. She's been doing this for 20 years. You know, it's just like people get up in the morning and they take their vitamins and they get up and they take their heart medication. She gets up and she does her therapy every day, 7 days a week, has for 28 years. And we hope that she does it for the next 28 years. Now, in order for her to do that, she has to have a steady supply of coffee. Now, coffee happens to be canned, vacuum-packed, in tin cans, keeps forever. We're using coffee now that I stockpiled in 1989. 1989 coffee is being used today up in our kitchen. Now, some years back, when coffee was about $4 a can, I went out and I bought a bunch of cans. I think I had 200 cans of it at one time. 200 cans, and we use about a can every 3 weeks. And so if you take 52 weeks and divide that, to give you a little lesson here in stockpiling, 52 divided by 3 is 17 cans a year. A little bit more than a can a month. So I need, in round numbers, about 20 cans a year. 4-year supply is 80 cans. 80 cans of coffee. So I put 100 cans on the shelf, and I had my 4-year supply over there, and then every once in a while, the price of coffee goes up. And one day, the price of coffee started going up, and it went up to $6 a can. And, of course, I didn't buy any. And people were just bellyaching, and they were complaining and crying, and they were saying, oh, my God, the price of coffee has gone up by 50%. It didn't for me. I was still paying the same $4 a can. Now, the other day, I happened to be in a store, and the price of coffee, I think, was $5 a can, as I recall. And I said, gee, that price of coffee is pretty good, $5 a can. And so they had about 25, 30 cans, and I said, I'll just take it home. And, of course, they looked at me like, huh? Huh? What? You're going to take it all? Yeah, just give it all to me. Like I'm a pig. It's a product. They got it on the shelf. Them with $5 a can, and they give them all to me. Put them back on my shelf, and I've got my supply there. Now, let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that there's a breakdown in the world's economy, whether it's caused by flu, or it's caused by war, or it's caused by, you know, who knows. And coffee comes in from outside our borders. Last time I checked, we weren't producing very much coffee here in the United States. Juan Valdez does not live in Bismarck, North Dakota. They don't produce any coffee up there. They drink coffee in Bismarck, but they don't have any coffee production facilities there, and so it has to be shipped in. So you people up in Bismarck, North Dakota, if you want to make sure that you have coffee out into the indefinite future, why don't you stockpile about 80 cans of coffee on your shelf? Everybody in Bismarck, stock 80 cans. You've all got one can on the shelf. Next time you go to the store, buy two. Then the next time you go to the store, buy four. And then the next time you go to the store, buy eight. And pretty soon you'll have 80 cans of coffee on the shelf. Over the next year, stockpile coffee until you got 80 cans sitting on your shelf. And then when the coffee gets shut off for whatever reason, you'll be sitting there drinking coffee. Won't affect your standard of living, and so far as coffee is concerned, one iota, will it? Now, if I come along and I start crying wolf and I say, there's going to be a shortage of coffee, you better stockpile your coffee, and it doesn't materialize, you get real mad at me, and you say, hey, Gordon, you're like that President Ford and swine flu. You're like Y2K. You're crying wolf. I'm sitting there saying, how in the hell is that going to harm you? If you've got the coffee sitting on the shelf and nothing happens, you're going to use the coffee off the shelf, aren't you? At some point, it's not going to spoil. And you can use that. It's a 4-year supply of coffee, and you can use it over the next 4 years and run yourself down to zero. I never run out of coffee. I never run down to zero. I always keep 80 cans on the shelf. And when I use 25 or 30 cans, I look at it and say, gee, I've only got a 3-year supply now. I guess I better buy another 25 or 30 cans. And so I go down and buy 25 or 30 cans. I don't need to buy a can every week or a can every month. I just buy it when I need it. All right, now let's extrapolate this out into this flu thing over here. I come on the air and I say, hey, listen, are you prepared for this swine flu thing? Or not swine flu, but bird flu thing. And you say, come on, Gordon, we went through this swine flu crap once before and we're not going to be deceived again. But wait a minute. What if the wolf actually comes? Remember the story of the little boy cried wolf? And then when all the townspeople came out with their guns and their knives and their pitchforks to kill the wolf, the little boy laughed and laughed, and he said, ha, 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 there was no wolf, I fooled you. So everybody's ticked off, and they go back to their jobs. And pretty soon he cries wolf again, and all the people come out, and there's no wolf, and he laughs, and he goes, ha, 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 there's no wolf, and blah, blah, blah. So this goes on 3 or 4 times, and pretty soon one day the wolf comes. And the little boy cries wolf. And all the people say, we've heard that swine flu crap and Y2K before, and we're not going to be deceived, so we're not going to come out. And this time the wolf comes and eats the sheep. Then what are you going to do, boys and girls? That's what just happened in Miami with Hurricane Wilma. You know, you people down in Florida have become so damn jaded about these hurricanes down there that you don't prepare for them. At least that woman didn't prepare for it. And, of course, the people that are prepared, they never get on television. There's probably lots of people down there that are unwinding from this hurricane and getting by quite nicely. And the people that don't prepare, it's like the story in the Bible of the 10 virgins. And there's 10 virgins, and 5 of them are wise, and 5 of them are foolish. You can read about this, I think it's in Matthew chapter 25. Kind of a little story goes along with my coffee story here. And so they've stockpiled some oil. Well, the bridegroom comes. The 5 foolish ones, they don't have any oil. And they come to the 5 that do have oil, and they say, hey, sell to me. And the 5 with the oil say, no, if we do that, there won't be enough. Picture this. You come to me and you say, hey, Gordon, there's no more coffee. Sell me your coffee. I'm going to say to you, what? What? Sell you my coffee? Sell you my 80 cans of coffee? What am I going to drink? What's my wife going to use? Now, you prepare for yourself. You take care of yourself. Don't rely upon FEMA. Don't rely upon the CDC and the National Institute of Health and George Bush and the Republicans. You, personally, you, take responsibility for you and you prepare for the flu. I told you this last year. Remember they had this shortage of flu vaccine. And I said, well, that's what I would do if I was selling flu vaccine. I would make sure that there was a shortage of it. It's kind of like gasoline. You make sure there's a shortage of it, and then you can tell people, we need $3 a gallon for gasoline. There's this terrible shortage. We're hitting peak oil. And whether peak oil is we're running out of oil, there's no more in the ground, or whether peak oil is politically motivated, or whether it's contrived, what the hell difference does it make to you? Drive into the damn gas station and see what the price is. What are you going to do, go out here and make your own? You're just going to shut up and pay the price. So why don't you get prepared a little ahead of time? Now, I'm going to be paying $3 a gallon for gasoline, just like all the rest of you. But I've got a few extra gallons sitting out here under the cedar tree in some 5-gallon cans. Don't stockpile this in your garage now. You want to make sure that it's kept outside. Don't want anybody to get hurt now. But, you know, put your 5-gallon cans out there behind the garage, out in the open, where it's well-ventilated. And then you'll have your own supply of gas. And every once in a while, you use that up and you replace it. And then when the hurricane comes, it doesn't affect you. Let everybody else stay in line for 3 miles and piss and moan and bitch about FEMA and the Republicans. But you'll have gasoline. Enough gasoline to tide you over until the next hurricane comes. Or you've got enough coffee to tide you over until the next shipment comes in. My God, that's the way Americans lived 70 years ago. We never complained about the government. I never heard anybody complaining about Franklin Roosevelt or the shortages that came upon us from World War II. We're at war. There are shortages. There's problems that come up. Solve your problems, Americans. Take care of yourselves. Now let's take a look here at devolution. Understanding the risks requires understanding the nature of H5N1 avian flu, specifically and influenza in general. Influenza originates with these aquatic birds and is normally carried by migratory ducks, geese, and herons. Let me underline ducks, geese, and herons. These are unclean birds, just like pigs and alligators and turtles are unclean. Ducks, geese, and herons are unclean birds. You shouldn't be eating them. That's just a little aside. Just thought I'd share that with you. Now, usually without harm to them, as the birds migrate, they can pass the viruses on to domesticated birds. That's your birds out in the backyard. I've got a bunch of birds over here, chickens, in my yard. Chickens, for example, by way of feces or during competitions over food, territory, and water. Throughout history, this connection between birds and the flu has spawned epidemics in Asia, especially southern China. Aquatic flu viruses are more likely to pass into domestic animals and then into humans in China than anywhere else in the world. Dense concentrations of humans and livestock have left little of China's original migratory route for birds intact. Birds that annually travel from Indonesia to Siberia and back are forced to land and search for sustenance in farms, city parks, and industrial sites. Now, for centuries, Chinese farmers have raised chickens, ducks, and pigs together in minuscule pens surrounding their homes, greatly increasing the chance of contamination. Influenza can spread from migrating to domestic birds and then to swine, mutating and eventually infecting human beings. Let me underline chickens, ducks, and pigs together. All right, now that's a problem. Ducks and pigs are unclean, and therefore you should not be keeping chickens, ducks, and pigs together. And that's because the unclean animals will infect your clean animals. For instance, I carry sheep and Jersey cows here on this place. I would not have a pig on my farm. If I did have a pig on my farm, I would have him fenced off in his location so that under no circumstances could he get in around or in any water or where his feces could in any way contaminate my clean animals. And this is the way life is, the way God designed things. Now, of course, we don't do that here in America. We eat pig. We mainline blood. I mean, we inject the blood into our veins and mainline it. Now, we were told not to eat blood. And generally, we Americans don't eat blood. We inject it. But then, again, that's why we get AIDS. That's why we get hepatitis. That's why we get some of these communicable diseases that are spread through blood and blood products. That's why I avoid transfusions. Now, the minute you say, well, I avoid transfusions, oh, that guy's one of those Jehovah's Witnesses. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Just because I avoid blood transfusions because the Bible tells me that I ought not to eat blood doesn't make me a Jehovah's Witness any more than reading Mein Kampf makes me a Nazi. But you know, people jump to conclusions all the time. So I want to share with you that point, that if you're going to keep ducks and pigs, unclean animals, around your clean animals, you're probably going to have some problems. So I'm going to avoid that here. I do have chickens, but I don't have any ducks. Now, wild ducks do fly by here from time to time. They go overhead, and once in a while they land out here in my pond. I got a pond out here. And my chickens do not drink out of that pond, and neither do my cattle. Now, that being the case, I can sort out or keep those wild ducks and their feces and their flu out in the pond and away from my livestock. Now, that's what I'm going to do. These Chinese don't do that. Lots of people don't do it. They don't practice simple hygiene 101. And then when they get sick, they blame the Jews. Now, the Jews do practice hygiene 101. And so I think the Muslims do too, but I don't. Don't quote me on that, but at least the Muslims do not eat unclean meat. Now, as a result of that, they are going to have better health than the Christians. And the Christians are just going to come unhinged when they're dying like flies. And they watch the Jews and the Muslims aren't dying like flies, and they're going to jump to conclusions and blame the Jews and the Muslims. Just mark my words. Tuck that one away in your heart, boys and girls, because it's happened many, many times in the past. There isn't any reason for it to change in the future. Now, ominously, as China's gross domestic product grows, So do the expensive appetites of the country's 1.3 billion people, more of whom can afford to eat chicken regularly. And today, China annually raises about 13 billion chickens, 60% of them on small farms. Chicken farming is quickly morphing into a major industry, with some commercial poultry plants rivaling those in Arkansas and Georgia in scale, but lagging behind in hygienic standards. These factors favor rapid influenza evolution. By the close of the 20th century, at least two new types of human-to-human flu spread around the world every year. Did you notice that? Now, by the close of the 20th century, there are two types of flu, and they've been spreading twice a year around the world, every year. These two types of flu. So now they've gotten a solution to this. So what we need to do is vaccinate people. It makes a lot of money for pharmaceuticals and keeps doctors off the streets and out of the pool halls. Doesn't do anything for us. I showed you that in a couple programs back. At best, it helps 28% of people. Doesn't prevent death in anybody. Actually, that's why I asked the question. So what the hell do you want it for? The efficacy of it is zero. And they all admit that. But they all recommend that you get your flu shot anyway. In spite of the fact that those who get the flu shots 5 times out of 10 years are going to increase their risk of Alzheimer's by 10 times. I don't want to risk Alzheimer's disease at all. Not even one time. I want to stay as far away from Alzheimer's disease as I can get. And the best way I can stay away from Alzheimer's disease is to lower my risk by 10 times by staying away from flu vaccine, which is what gives it to you. It gives you 10 times greater risk. Not everybody that gets flu vaccine is going to get Alzheimer's disease, but 10 times more people that get flu vaccines are going to get it than those that don't. And I don't make up these numbers, boys and girls. I get them right off of the machine, just like everybody else. All I know is what I read in the papers. And if you can't believe your government, who can you believe? Going on. Influenza viruses contain 8 genes composed of RNA and packaged loosely in protective proteins. Like most RNA viruses, influenza virus reproduces sloppily. Its genes readily fall apart, and it can absorb different genetic material and get mixed up in the process called reassortment. I'm going to underline the word reassortment. See, they've been calling that evolution. It isn't. It's reassortment. It's a variation. When influenza successfully infects a new species, let's say pigs, for an example, it can reassort. And it may switch from being an avian virus to a mammalian virus. When that occurs, a human epidemic can result. The transmission cycles and the constant evolution, it's called reassortment, are key to influenza's continued survival. For were it to remain identical year after year, most animals would develop immunity and the flu would die out. This changing form explains why influenza is a seasonal disease. Vaccines made one year are generally useless the following. Well, let's pay attention to reading that and let's analyze it. Did you hear that? Vaccines that are made one year are useless the following year. And that's because there's going to be a reassortment, and these genes are going to change. Well, now, if that's the case, if they didn't change constantly, then everyone would develop an immunity to it, and the flu would die out. So why doesn't the flu die out? Well, it's because it's constantly reassorting itself. And why is it constantly reassorting itself? Well, because we constantly keep ducks and pigs and chickens in close proximity with people and we eat unclean foods. So we keep the cycle perpetually going. And come on, boys and girls. No, we're not talking rocket science here. You don't have to be real smart. You got to be a little smarter than brain dead, but not real, real smart. You don't have to have a Rhodes Scholarship, you know. Among the 8 influenza genes, there are 2, and those 2 genes are dubbed H and N. Those 2 genes provide the code for proteins recognized by the human immune system. Scientists have numbered the many types of H and N proteins and used this system to classify a virus. So So a different viral combination of H and N proteins will trigger a different human immune response. For example, if a strain of H2N3 influenza circulates 1 year, followed by a different variety, let's call it H2N3 the next year, most people will be at least partially immune to this second strain. But if an H2N3 season is followed by an outbreak of H3N5 influenza, very few people will have any immunity to the second virus, and the epidemic could be enormous. But a widespread epidemic need not be a severe or particularly deadly one. A virus virulence depends on genes other than the two that control the H and N proteins. Now, scientists first started saving flu virus samples in the early 20th century. Since that time, an H5N1 influenza has never spread among human beings. According to the World Health Organization, no virus of the H5 subtype has probably ever circulated among humans, and certainly not within the lifetime of anybody today. Population vulnerability to an H5N1-like pandemic virus would be universal, as for virulence within about 48 hours of infection, H5N1 avian influenza kills 100% of infected chickens. Although the virulence of a potential human-to-human transmissible H5N1 is impossible to predict. So we don't know if it's going to be a swine flu story. It doesn't amount to anything. It's a tempest in a teapot. Or if it's going to amount to a Spanish flu virus, which could kill 50 or 100 billion people. Or it could be 10 times worse than that. We don't know. They're just speculating. And in this speculation, they are selling people by the millions, tons and tons of this roach product, you know, called Tamiflu. I told you, it's selling for five times the list price in the drugstores right now. And the Roche is now licensing people to produce it. I mean, this is a boon for the pharmaceutical companies like you can't believe. This propaganda is going to sell billions and billions of dollars worth of crap for you to stick up your arms and up your nostrils and up your rectum if you so desire. But in the final analysis, there isn't anybody out there that's got an inkling as to what in the hell is going to happen. But you ought to be prepared for it, don't you think? Just in case, you ought to have a few extra cans of coffee on the shelf, just in case. A couple extra cans of gasoline behind the garage, just in case. Maybe a few extra pounds of pinto beans up on the shelf, just in case. Don't you think? And let me give you a reminder here before we continue. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Just go to the webpage, click on to the radio log, and you'll get the positions. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free, get that, free, four-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about this bird flu, the epidemic that they're all predicting. They promise. They're not just predicting, they're promising it. Now, from 1998 to 2001, this virus went through multiple reassortments and moved back to domestic birds, spreading almost unnoticed in Chinese flocks. It continued to evolve at high speed. 17 more reassortments occurred, and in January 2003, the Z virus emerged. A mutant powerhouse that had become tougher, capable of withstanding a wider range of environmental challenges, and the Z virus spread to Vietnam and Thailand, where it evolved further, becoming resistant to one of the two classes of anti-flu drugs known as M2 inhibitors. In early 2004, it became super virulent and capable of killing a broad range of species, including rodents and humans. That permutation of the virus was dubbed Z+, and in the first 3 weeks of January 2004, Z+ killed 11 million chickens in Vietnam and Thailand. By April 2004, 120 million chickens in Asia died of flu or been exterminated to slow the influenza brush fire. The avian epidemic stopped for a while, but in July another 1 million chickens died from the disease. The Z+ virus was causing massive internal bleeding in the birds. By the beginning of 2005, with chickens dying and customers shying away from what remained, the Asian poultry industry had been lost, or it had lost nearly $15 billion. Okay, I'm going to put a bracket around that and point out to you, question arises, should you eat the meat off of these infected chickens? How in the hell do you know if it's been infected or not? See your problem? You don't know. I don't know. So you need to be protected from the flu, and it may be in the chicken that you're eating, maybe in the birds. Now, that's why I kind of like having my own chickens here. I can eat chicken as long as we're pretty sure that Tyson chicken is uncontaminated. I have some chicken in my freezer. I've got a freezer out here, and I've got some chicken in it. And remember that this isn't going to go on forever. I mean, you know, at some point in time, swine flu died out. Hong Kong flu died out, didn't it? It's still there. I mean, there's swine flu and Hong Kong flu somewhere in the world, but it's not virulent. It's not attacking lots of people. There's probably a few people in the world that get it and die every year, but it's not something you need to be terrified of or quit eating chicken because of it. But when this thing goes ballistic, you know, there'll come a point in time when you might want to consider not eating chicken out of the grocery store. That's what's happening over in Asia. And you found, we've discovered already in prior broadcasts, I showed you that people that eat contaminated flesh of chickens get the flu and die from it. So my common sense says there's coming a time when we're not going to want to be eating very much of that chicken, at least that store-bought chicken. You might want to be eating your own chicken or the chicken that you've already prepared. Remember the stuff that you prepared and you set aside? Have you got a 4-year supply of chicken set aside in your freezer? I know when I say that, people look at me like, my God, you got to be out of your cotton picking mind. Why, you can't have a 4-year supply of chicken in your freezer. Why not? How much chicken do you eat? Well, here we eat about one chicken every week. Maybe two chickens a month. We eat a little vegetarian here. We eat a little beef here. We eat a little lamb here. We eat a little chicken here, you know. So if you were going to eat in your family one chicken every week, you'd need 52 chickens for a year's supply. Will your freezer hold 52 chickens? Mine will. If you eat two chickens a month, 52 chickens are a 2-year supply. 104 chickens would be a 4-year supply if you eat it twice a month. I mean, I just throw that out for your consideration. No. It isn't like, you know, it was trying to build the hydrogen bomb. Hell, even with your Texas Instrument calculator, you can probably do those advanced mathematical calculations, and you can decide how much chicken you eat. Just ask your wife, "Hey, sweetheart, how much chicken do we eat?" She might say, "I don't know." Keep track of it this month, would you? Every time you buy chicken, write it down, remind me of it, tell me, so at the end of the month. At the end of the month, she'll say, "Yeah, we bought one chicken this month. We had chicken one time." Then you only need 52 birds, one chicken a month, 12, 24, 36, 48, 52 chickens would last you for 4 years, and you have a 4-year supply. You wouldn't be concerned about bird flu and the shortage of chicken, would you? But again, that would require you preparing for yourself. I mean, you'd be relying totally upon your own capacity. FEMA would be totally out of it. And then when there's a shortage of chicken and everybody else is complaining about the chicken shortage, you got plenty of chicken and you're not pissing and moaning about FEMA and George Bush and the Republicans or the Jews or the Arab terrorists. And you'll have plenty of chicken. By April of 2005, this H5N1, now they were talking about in recent times now, as I speak to you, this is November 2005. Last April, 6 months ago, 2005, the H5N1 virus had also moved to pigs. So now it's transmissible from pig to pig, chicken to chicken, birds to chicken, birds to pigs. And we got this new Z virus over here. So they're telling us, hey, it's a short hop now from pigs and chickens to people. And then human to human transmission is right on the horizon. I don't doubt it. I don't know. That's what they're telling us. This is from Foreign Affairs Magazine. This is the CFR. These are the elitists. These are the guys that are predicting it. I'm sitting here saying, oh my God. If this guy is telling me the truth, we're going to have this terrible flu pandemic. Okay, so what am I going to do? I'm not going to stop it. I'm not going to advance it. I'm not going to do jack squat with it, to it, for it, or about it. And neither are you. So don't worry about those 1.3 billion Chinese over there. Let them fend for themselves. You better concentrate on you up there in Fargo, North Dakota, or Bismarck, or wherever you live. What am I going to do to protect me and my family from this bird flu, which everybody is telling me is going to happen? All right, so be thinking about your colloidal silver. Hey, if you don't want colloidal silver and charcoal, then go down and get your flu shot. Start thinking about your Tamiflu, boys and girls. You know, start thinking about taking care of yourself. Because if you don't, you'll end up one of these days with a sore throat, and you won't have your Tamiflu, you won't have your silver, you won't have your charcoal, you won't have your vaccination, and you'll get sick, and then you'll blame the Jews. And then the Jews will get mad and call you anti-Semitic, and then you'll get into it, and you'll be sick, and you won't feel like fighting. So why don't you think ahead a little bit? Think, you know, as Taco Bell says, think outside the bun. Think outside FEMA. Think outside politics. Think outside of government for a change. And start planning for yourself. Take care of yourself. Now, the scientists isolated the disease from swine in a part of Indonesia where pigs are raised underneath elevated wood slatted platforms that house chickens. Now you got your chickens, a clean bird, with your pigs, which are unclean. See what your problem is? Less rigorous investigations had previously indicated that pigs in China and Vietnam may also have been infected by H5N1. The discovery in Indonesia provided disturbing evidence that the virus was infecting mammals, although it was not yet known how widely the swine disease had spread or how lethal it was for the animals. I don't know how many people in Indonesia are Muslims, but evidently the people of Indonesia, the Christians over there, and Buddhists and others, I guess, are raising pigs. Hard to kill. Now, over the course of this brief but rapid evolution, the H5N1 virus has developed in ways unprecedented in influenza research. It's not only incredibly deadly, but also incredibly difficult to contain. The virus apparently now has the ability to survive in chicken feces and the meat of dead animals, despite the lack of blood flow and living cells. Raw chicken meat fed to tigers in Thailand zoos resulted in the deaths of 147 out of a total of 418 tigers. What percentage is that? 147 divided by 418 tells us that 35% of the tigers died when fed the chicken meat, raw chicken meat, that was infected by this H5N1 strain. Would you like to eat some of that chicken, boys and girls? Well, I'll tell you, you can have my share. That way, I won't be standing in line competing with you. I have my chicken already stockpiled, chicken that I already know doesn't have the disease, chicken that I know is clean. All right. Now, there's plenty of clean chicken out there, so why don't you stockpile a little of that clean chicken before the flu epidemic hits, and then you won't be complaining about the shortage of chicken. Now, this virus has also found ways to vastly increase the range of species that it can infect and kill. Most strains of influenza are not lethal in lab mice, but Z plus is lethal in 100% of the lab mice. Oh, I can see why these guys are starting to go ballistic. They give it to tigers and it kills 35% of them. They give it to chickens, it kills 100% of them. They give it to lab mice, it kills 100%. Then they sit over here and say, oh my God, if this stuff goes from human to human, what will its lethality be? It might be 0.6. It might be less than that. We don't know. That's what the experts are telling me. We ain't got a clue. We don't know until it happens. But I'm sitting here, you know, like everybody else, listening to these guys cry wolf, and I'm sitting here saying, well, I've got something to gain and nothing to lose. So tuck this one away in your heart. You heard it right here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. When you've got something to gain and nothing to lose, go for it. So by stocking my coffee, stocking my toilet paper, and stocking my chicken, I have something to gain and nothing to lose. You can stockpile your money in John Harlan's bank. Here in our county, we call it John Harlan's Bank, the Bank of Gainesville. Well, you can give your money to John Harlan and hope that you can get your money out of the bank and go to Walmart and buy your chicken. Or you can go take your money out of John's bank today and buy the chicken. Then you'll have chicken in the freezer, but you won't have any money in John's bank. Well, with inflation running at 12% a year, I don't think you can go wrong. It converts your worthless money that's losing value at 12% a year into things that you can use at a later date. Just don't buy fresh strawberries. You'll find that fresh strawberries don't keep as long as coffee in cans or chicken in a freezer. I tested it. Trust me. You trusted George Bush with the war in Iraq. Now trust me on the chicken, would you? These traditional Asian methods of buying, slaughtering, and cooking meat make it hard to track the spread of an influenza virus. It even kills the very types of wild migratory birds that normally host influenza strains harmlessly. And yet domestic ducks, for unknown reasons, carry the virus without a problem, which may explain where Z plus hides between outbreaks among chickens. All right. Now remember, you've got clean animals and unclean. God tells you don't eat unclean animals. People that don't eat unclean animals don't keep unclean animals. I guess that makes a lot of sense. I don't eat unclean, so I don't have any ducks and I don't have any pigs here because I don't eat them. I keep sheep and I keep cows. I keep chickens because they're clean and God tells us we can eat those. So I eat those and I don't keep the unclean. So that's practicing hygiene. Now, other people keep their chickens, their ducks, and their pigs together. They eat pig, they eat blood, they eat fat, They eat ducks. They weaken their immune systems. They give this disease to their chickens. They eat the chickens, and the chicken spreads the disease to the people, and they get a death rate of 54%. You know, again, we're not talking rocket science. I'm just giving you the facts here. It comes right out of Foreign Affairs magazine. Assuming, of course, these guys are telling the truth. I don't have any reason to believe that they're lying to us. Now, I'm sure that they've got a motive, and I'm sure they want to sell a lot of vaccine. They want to sell a lot of Tamiflu. I don't doubt that. I'm not buying any of it. But I don't doubt but what this flu can be just as virulent as they're claiming that it can be. I think you'd be better advised to keep your chickens away from your pigs. I think you should keep your ducks separate from your chickens. I think you should get rid of your ducks and your pigs. It would just make more sense. Going on here, they say that in Asia, consumers prefer to buy live chickens and other live animals at the market and then slaughter them in home kitchens. Asians thus have a high level of exposure to potentially disease-carrying animals, both in their homes and as they pass through the markets that line the streets of densely packed urban centers. For someone trying to trace a disease, Asia is a nightmare. With people daily exposed to live chickens in so many different environments, how can a sleuth tell whether an ailing flu victim was infected by a chicken, a duck, a migratory heron, or another human being? Now that's important. I'm going to underline another human being. Because when this thing goes ballistic from human to human, nobody's going to know it. They're not going to know whether they got it from a chicken, a duck, or a pig. And that's where you're at today. So far, they've only had 100 cases or so, and so far, they haven't been able to trace it to any other humans, and so the presumption is it isn't communicable from human to human. But they're telling us now that when it becomes communicable, which swine flu did, which Hong Kong flu did, all of these flus inevitably, at some point in time, become transmissible from human to human. That's been the history of it. Since that's been the history of it, there's no reason to believe, in little Georgie Gordon's mind, no reason to believe that it won't happen here. It might not. The right combination may not come up. That would be good for all of us. But inevitably, these combinations, these reassignments, they call them, this evolution, just continues on and on and on until pretty soon you're going to hit the right combination. And when it does, bingo, it's doomsday. Well, that's what they're telling us. Although most of the 109 known human H5N1 infections have been ascribed to some type of contact with chickens, mysteries abound, and many cases remain unsolved. This virus is no longer causing large and highly conspicuous outbreaks on commercial farms. A 2005 World Health Organization summary of the human Z-plus cases states, quote, "Nor have poultry workers or cullers turned out to be an important risk group that could be targeted for protection. Instead, this virus has become stealthier. Human cases are now occurring with no discernible exposure to H5N1 through contact with diseased or dead birds." Uh-oh. Let me underline that. So far, human cases are now occurring, and they have no discernible exposure to this H5N1 through contact with diseased or dead birds. What's that tell you? Well, that says it's already gone from person to person. It's already mutated. If it hasn't, then they're telling us that it could have, and then when they unleash it, the prophecy comes to pass. Now, like I said before, I don't know if some bad guy is going to go out here and put it in your water supply in downtown Cleveland, or if it's going to be by an act of God like Hurricane Katrina. But I'm ready for it. I've got my charcoal, I've got my colloidal silver. I use it. I have silver jewelry. we wear it. We keep our chickens separated from any other animals, especially wild animals that might land in the pond. There's two herons that come in here and eat fish out of the pond. They might be carrying it, but I keep my chickens separate from them. They're not down there cavorting with the herons or the ducks. I don't have any pigs on the farm. I'm practicing hygiene. I practice the biblical laws on clean and unclean meats. I'm ready for the flu. I'm not buying Tamiflu. I'm not paying for vaccinations. I'm not worried and I'm not pacing the floor and walking around with sweat popping out on my forehead, transfixed by the bad reports that are coming in from every source and the news media telling me, oh my God, Armageddon is at the door. Because Armageddon is not at the door. Not yet. It's coming. You may live to see it, but it ain't going to be tomorrow or next week or next month. Armageddon ain't here yet. But this flu may be here already. And you ought to be ready for it. And we'll talk more about how to get ready for it in the upcoming program here tomorrow or the next day. Now, the proximity, or if proximity to infected animals is the key, then why have there been no deaths among chicken handlers, or poultry workers, or live chicken dealers? Uh-oh. Boy, that's a mystery. It's being transmitted by chickens. People that eat these chickens have died from it. People that buy these chickens and take them home get sick. How come the poultry workers themselves, the chicken handlers, not a single case among those guys? I don't know. I'm just reporting the paragraph to you. I'm just reading you the story. I'm just telling you the facts. I don't know either. And they're sitting here saying, gosh, the majority of the infected have been young adults and children, and there has been one documented case of human-to-human transmission of the Z-plus strain of the H5N1 virus in late 2004 in Thailand. Several more such cases are suspected but cannot be confirmed. According to the World Health Organization, there is no scientific explanation for the unusual disease pattern. All right, let me underline that. Unusual disease pattern. Now let me explain to you this unusual disease pattern. It's in Exodus chapter 15, verse 26. Listen to this. This will blow your socks right off your feet. Exodus 15, verse 26 says, let me get my loop on here. It says, and said, if you will diligently hearken to the voice of the Eternal your God, and you will do that which is right in his sight, if you will give ear to his commandments and keep all of his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Eternal that healeth thee. Did you get that? I, the personal pronoun I, speaking of God, the God of Abraham, said, I will put none of these diseases upon you. Do you suppose that maybe this is the hand of God putting this disease upon people? I didn't write that either. I'm just a reporter giving you the facts. That's Ezekiel. That's Exodus, not Ezekiel. That's Exodus 15, verse 26. God says, I put these diseases on people personally. Live and direct. Give me credit where credit's due. Well, I'm about out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll pick it up right here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Let me give you a closing reminder. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegort.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, and civil rights, along with biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I gotta leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.